Welcome to the ITAM Review Podcast, news, reviews and resources for ITAM, SAM and software licensing professionals.
Right, hello everyone, and welcome to the August edition of our new monthly kind of news discussion podcast, which now has a name. We're now calling it ITAM Antics. And, you know, you'd like to think that we were very creative and came up with that ourselves, but there might have been a little bit of AI assistance in this creation. We'll spare you all the other suggestions that it came up with, but we're happy with ITAM Antics. I think it's a decent one. So basically, a recap: we go through the main kind of biggest ITAM stories over the past month. Obviously, we're in the middle of summer at the moment, so it's fairly quiet for news, but there are a few stories out there that we thought would be worth discussing. Joined as usual by Rich.
Hi everyone, good to be here.
And AJ.
Hi everyone.
So, four stories this month. Firstly, we're going to talk about Zluri raising 20 million in their latest funding. I think that's their second funding round. Then Europeans paying a cloud tax, a 20% cloud tax, according to the CISPE report. We'll go through that in a bit more detail. Then we've got, we're going to discuss an interview that we did with Pam Fulmer, who's a technology litigator at Tactical Law Group, around a court ruling in California that could open the door to potentially suing your software vendor. And then lastly, we've got a Xylo case study to discuss with a small little customer of theirs by the name of Adobe. You may have heard of them. So we'll discuss that one later. So, just to kick things off, a few housekeeping things, because we've got quite a few events coming up. Normally at this time of the year, the business kind of looking towards Wisdom APAC, but we've got two other events to get through before then. So if you've heard of FinOps, then I think you're going to like this one. So ITAM and FinOps, how to win big. So on the 12th of September, Rich is heading out to Vegas, the Las Vegas, to do a one-day event all about FinOps. So kind of the main description on this one is that obviously as budgets tighten and cloud use continues to rise, managing cloud spend is a top priority for organizations across the globe. Understanding how to do this while creating synergies between ITAM and FinOps can be a game changer for you, your career, and your business. The event is free to attend for ITAM professionals. So if you're in the US, then I highly recommend you sign up. So that's on the 12th of September, so not long. And also in September, towards the end, on the 27th of September, in London, we've got the second iteration of Wisdom Unplugged. This again is our single day Wisdom event. Free again for ITAM professionals. One day conference at the London Transport Museum, so just near Covent Garden in central London. So come along. It's a single day, single sponsor with Flexera. Come enjoy a great range of presentations, workshops, and interactive sessions. And then last but not least, obviously we have Wisdom APAC coming up. And as is customary, when we head over to Australia, we're switching over to Melbourne for this one. So last year it was Sydney, this year it's Melbourne. So that is on Wednesday the 15th and Thursday the 16th of November. So that's our flagship two-day event, Wisdom event, over in APAC. Number of topics, there are obviously FinOps, the convergence of that with ITAM, bring your own licensing, public cloud, SaaS governance, sustainability, ITAD, lots more. The agenda is still being built out, so head on over to itassetmanagement.net for details on all of those events and to sign up. Right, let's kick off then with the first story. So Zluri raising 20 million. So so we get a lot of cloud management, kind of SaaS management, cloud management news recently. So last month we had that IBM was acquiring Apptio for 4.6 billion. This month we had SaaS management company Zluri announcing that it had completed a $20 million Series B funding raise. To recap, Zluri tools enable IT managers to keep track of their organization's SaaS usage. So monitoring who in the business has access to which apps, as well as how much they're spending, and giving them a means in which they can take back control of that spending. It was founded just a few years ago in 2020. It is among the newest players in the growing SaaS management platform space, and this is its second round of funding. So let's get thoughts from you guys. AJ, do you want to start? What are your thoughts on this kind of the
management
platform space?
So Series B, when you're looking at funding, Series B means it's basically just the second round of funding. You go kind of seed round, which is kind of the initial bit, and then Series A, which is the first kind of public round, and then Series B. So this is their sort of second tranche of big money, I suppose, that's come in. For the first time as well, it's via investors from outside of India. Zlyria based in India, Indian run, although they have US presence as well. So it really shows, you know, that they, you know, there's still money in the SaaS market. We had a big explosion of interest in SaaS management back in sort of 2018, 2019. And just before the pandemic, there was quite a few kind of funding rounds and also some acquisitions and so on as well. So it's been a little bit quiet for the last couple of years. So it's good to see that this is sort of still on the radar of investors. Investors clearly think there's money to be made in the SaaS management space. And Zlyria taking perhaps being kind of like a second mover, I suppose, kind of they weren't part of the original kind of bunch of SaaS management firms. They've kind of said taking a slightly different approach. They're really quite heavily focused on risk management. And also on automating as well. They tend to be sort of a bit more mid-market, I suppose, in terms of customers that they're looking for as well. And like many IT firms, of course, there's such a huge amount of talent out in India in terms of kind of technical talent and also just people with experience of running companies, and the guys running Zlyria have run companies before. So, you know, it's they're well placed, and I think as money really kind of takes them to the next level, I think they've it will go into developing the platform and also probably expanding internationally as well. So there's definitely sort of focus back on this area, which it needs to be, because as we'll hear later in the Adobe case study, SaaS spending gets out of control really, really rapidly. It's really difficult to manage just operationally as well. And it isn't just about kind of, optimizing contracts and saving money. SaaS management as a concept goes way beyond that. And actually, I would say the cost management bit of it is probably the least important. Once you've got to grips with it, and you've got an idea of where your money is being spent, well, then you get some processes in place to kind of better control that. So that's kind of a short-term deliverable from SaaS management. The stuff that Zlyria get involved with, the risk management and the automation side of it, is your kind of operational, ongoing reason for paying attention to your SaaS stack. So, good to see this market still moving.
Rich, anything to add?
I agree with AJ really that it's interesting, you know, that people are still investing in SaaS companies. You know, it kind of on one hand feels like it's been around for ages and everyone knows what they're doing and, you know, tools are as good as they can be, etc. So this is kind of, you know, proof that isn't the case and that there is still growth and new things happening. It's good to see, you know, and sort of relatively, as AJ said, a sort of newer player strengthening, you know, always good for the market and for customer choice and things. So very nice to see, yeah.
Yeah, good news. All right, well, let's move on to the next story of the day. So this was about Europeans paying the report termed a cloud tax of up to 20%. In some cases it was 28 or so was the figure banded around. So bear in mind, this is a report by CISPE, which is a cloud infrastructure service providers in Europe group. And they've basically commissioned quite an extensive report, an academic report really, by Professor Frederick Jenny, to look at, well, basically to quantify the additional cost of running enterprise software outside of the vendor's own cloud infrastructure. So basically they're equating the cost of using your own servers, your own cloud, and the cost of running that software on your own cloud. So it equates this extra cost to an additional tax of billions of euros every year, effectively just for enterprises and the public sector running software they already own in the cloud infrastructure of their choice. So it was quite critical in places. A number of software vendors were mentioned. Microsoft was mentioned quite more than others. I don't know whether they were particularly targeted for any particular reason, but obviously, Rich, as the resident Microsoft person, I'm going to turn to you first on this. So, I mean, I was looking at this. There's two ways you can look at it, really, isn't it? It's either they're charging you more to use your own cloud, so that, you know, you could use the term tax, or is it the case that they're, you know, if Microsoft wants you to use Azure, then they're going to incentivize you to do that, so they're offering you a discount. Is that taxing you for not using it, or incentivizing you for using their cloud? So what's your take on that?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both, really. All the vendors do it to one degree or another, you know, and I'm never quite sure. I think it's a case by case thing. Sometimes you think, well, you know, they're not stopping me from using someone else's, they're just, you know, fair enough incentivizing me to use theirs. But there are some scenarios where it becomes, you know, very difficult or much more expensive to use someone else's for no real reason. And I think that's the thing with licensing, that, you know, it's not down to technical reasons or support or anything, you know, it's, you know, relatively arbitrary. So there are some things where you think, oh, you know, maybe that's going a bit too far in one direction. So the report is really interesting. You know, the CISPA did another report similarly a couple of years ago. And again, the report is really good. Slight, you know, pinch of salt maybe that it's commissioned by Microsoft's competitors. You know, I think Amazon are a member of CISPA, I believe. So there are things like that to consider. But all in all, you know, any what's the phrase? You know, any kind of overview of the cloud, you know, it's all still so new. I think any time people are held to account and we all look at what's happening, it can't really be a bad thing. And I know, you know, it talks about Europe, the kind of the extra costs, you know, they apply elsewhere as well. But things do come out of this. So Microsoft relaxed a lot of their licensing rules a couple of years ago to enable the vast majority of third-party cloud providers to run Microsoft software in ways that they couldn't, but they didn't include Amazon or Google or Alibaba. So you know, that was a seemingly a relatively direct result of some of the work from CISPA, which then led to the EU getting involved and taking a look. And there is an EU directive, the Digital Markets Act, which is on its way, which will take aim at what they call, I think, cloud gatekeepers, I think they call them, so Microsoft, Amazon, Google. So there is an element of regulation being involved already. Microsoft, they did make some changes, and then kind of tied in with this, you know, some of the big news for August. So one of the problems for a lot of customers is running Microsoft software on Amazon cloud is very difficult in many cases. Microsoft have now allowed you to run Office 365 apps for enterprise, the Office piece, on Amazon Workspaces, which is the Amazon hosted virtual desktop offering. And that, I know customers all around the world who've been after doing that for years. So they've made that a possibility now. Is that because of this CISPA report? Is it because of, you know, the EU? Is it a little bit of everything? Is it out of the goodness of their hearts? You know, who knows? But I think there's definitely, you know, there are changes which need to be made, and changes are being made. Microsoft, I think, you know, they're always the focus because everyone uses Microsoft one way or another as an organization. And, you know, they are the biggest example of people who have software and have a cloud. You know, Google and Amazon, they've got the cloud, but they don't have the on-premises software side of things, really. So I think Microsoft are the biggest example of this scenario. And I'm conscious I've been talking for quite a long time, so I will I'll leave it there, because I could talk about this for forever, I think.
do you think this is, are we going to see, like, obviously Microsoft's been the target of EU just regulation in the past, just thinking all the way back to the whole unbundling of Internet Explorer from Windows, so they got into a lot of heat for that. Is this just because they're the ones that they're looking at, that they might? I suppose it's agitating, isn't it, at the moment, to kind of get some change before the regulation goes really kicks in a lot. Do you think we're going to get to a place where the regulators will mandate something?
On a slightly different side, so the EU have announced that they've started a competition inquiry into Microsoft around bundling Teams with Office. It came from a Slack complaint in 2020. So they've taken 3 years. I assume they've been looking at it for 3 years, or it was in a big pile and they only picked it up a couple of weeks ago. But they've looked at it and they've said, yeah, we are going to investigate, you know, Microsoft putting Teams for free in Office. Is that unfair bundling under Article 102 of the TFEU? So not 100% on the cloud side that the CISPA report's looking at, but it does show that, you know, the EU in particular,
it's awake, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, with the Digital Markets Act that's coming, and you know, sort of tangentially related, the smartphone rules around you know, removable batteries and USB-C ports. The EU, it really does seem to be focusing on technology, you know, hardware and software, and I think anything like that should be beneficial for consumers in the end. Although one potential outcome of the Teams thing is that Microsoft will start charging for Teams rather than bundling it for free. So, you know, that's a consideration for businesses, you know, further down the line, you know, because, you know, so many people use Teams. So I think it's definitely worth people keeping an eye on that investigation as well.
All right. Shall we move on to the next story? So, can you sue your software vendor? So, certainly an interesting headline. So, this is our interview with Pam Fulmer, the technology litigator at Tactical Law Group, based on some analysis that she did of a California Supreme Court ruling. So, I'll go through the details. It's quite technical and legal. So, I'll read it to make sure I get it right. So, a California Supreme Court ruling pointed out that, Pam Fulmer and her analysis of it pointed out that customers of Oracle who believe they have been victimized by predatory software audits, VMware overreaches, or NetSuite suite success failures may have a new tool in their toolbox to combat Oracle and certain of its alleged unfair practices. She recently wrote a blog post about how this would open the door to software publishers, not just Oracle, but others that are potentially being sued by their customers for what she called predatory audits. The case that it's based on was a case of Siri Investment LP versus Farcon Depor, that clarified that a claim for a civil theft of money could be made and if proven, could result in the award of treble damages and the award of attorney's fees and costs. It all hinges on the definition of theft of money. In this case, the money being obtained through fraud, misrepresentation, or breach of a contractual promise. In the case of audits, this could mean anyone who feels they were misrepresented or strong-armed into buying Oracle Cloud or making a large payment to resolve an audit. But then after the audit, the company learns that the millions of dollars in exposure that the software publisher said existed was actually not true. So, you know, there's a case of looking back at audits and seeing, you know, understanding whether you were strong-armed into settling and whether you can trust the claim that the vendor made. I mean, it's you know, it all comes down to good ITAM, doesn't it? Knowing, you know, shouldn't just take the vendor's word for it. So, Rich, what are your thoughts? Obviously, this is should Oracle be worried about this? Should other vendors be worried about this? I mean, we should clarify that this is California specific in this instance. What could be the broader implications of this, do you think?
Yeah, I remember seeing Pam's article and thinking, oh, you know, this could be interesting. I think, you know, probably should say, you know, just for safety, you know, none of us are lawyers, so we are absolutely just some talking heads looking at this from the outside. But it feels to me like possibly, you know, it addresses the kind of imbalance between auditor and auditee. However, I think anything, you know, legal tends to be a last resort for customers, and taking a software publisher to court is a big ask. You know, it's scary, it's expensive, it's risky. So I don't know how much we'll see it in real life, but it might well be, you know, something if customers are aware of it and, you know, are able to make a decent case around it, then, you know, in your negotiations with the vendor, it might be that just mentioning, oh yeah, do you remember you know, Siri Investment versus Farcon Depot, you know, that might be enough to get people's attention. So I think, you know, anything like this, it's always worthwhile IT asset managers taking note, following it. You know, we'll obviously do our best to keep up on the reporting as much as we can see publicly. And I think hopefully it will be something that gives a little bit of power back to the end user organizations in these scenarios.
It's interesting. And AJ, what are your thoughts on it? Do you think companies will be going back through their past audits to see if they can make a case for being strong-armed in their settlement?
Well, I think the thing is, this is something that's to do with the general point of contract law. You know, it's not looking at kind of techie things to do with metrics or what you can and cannot do with Oracle software. It could apply to almost, indeed it does apply to almost any type of contract, and not just related to Oracle. And historically, what we know is that Oracle will avoid court at all costs. You know, typically what happens is there's a bunch of brinkmanship and it gets to the court date and lo and behold, it's settled out of court. That's what happened with probably the most famous Oracle court case, Mars versus Oracle. You know, it was all settled and sealed and nobody knows how it was settled, but it was settled in Mars's favor. But this isn't to do with kind of challenging Oracle's perception of how their metrics work. This is about contract law in general. So you'd have to be able to prove that it's more to do with good conduct and equitable contracts, I suppose. So, and then also that may also mean that it's a bit more within the purview of a standard corporate counsel. You know, it isn't a technical law. It's a law thing, not a technology thing. So they may feel more confident to go after them, and just as they would against a, you know, another service provider where they feel they've not received good service. It's interesting that NetSuite is mentioned. It seems that isn't a week that goes by without a NetSuite litigation coming to the fore. It's to do with the way they're bundling those products and kind of landing and expanding, I suppose, which is kind of what you do with a SaaS product like NetSuite anyway. But that's where those things have come from. So perhaps we moved on a little bit with Oracle onto some of their ancillary products. I know we mentioned it in the Cloud Summit as well. We had Sonar have got ongoing litigation with Veterans Affairs in the US, and Sonar and recently acquired by Oracle. So maybe that's what's happening. This kind of, rather than taking on the might of Big Red, they're chipping away at kind of products that have been brought in as well. So I guess it, as Rich kind of alluded to, it comes down to whether you want to get the lawyers involved or not. You know, it's going to be long running, expensive and messy, isn't it? If you do take them on, mm-hmm. You have to be pretty confident of your chance of winning, I think.
Yeah, indeed. There's a lot of in and outs to it, and I would urge anyone that's interested in this to read the full interview with Pam. It was published on 25th of July. So we go into the detail of kind of the broader implications for this with other vendors and how you could go about what kind of the standards you'd have to meet to be able to look to sue your software vendor for a predatory audit. So I urge people to go and have a look at that. Okay, last but not least, we have a little story about Xylo have published a case study on their website. And often these case studies are, you know, some company that they've done business with and improved their processes and, you know, save them some money. This time the customer was another software vendor that you may have heard of called Adobe, which we thought was quite interesting. So, you know, SaaS management, and they saved Adobe $60 million consolidating their apps from 2,400 apps down to just 400, saving 10,000 hours of provisioning time through automation. So, AJ, you flagged this one out. What are your thoughts on this?
There's a couple of things here. I mean, firstly, I'm quite surprised that Adobe weren't already on this, right? You just imagine that they would be paying attention to such things. But what they say in the case study is that really the driver for it is that Adobe has doubled in size in terms of revenue over the last few years, mainly through acquisition. They acquired Tableau, was a big acquisition. Also, Marketo, I'm not sure how you pronounce that. Anyway, market too, as well. So yeah, they've really kind of doubled in size in terms of revenue, and also that means in terms of complexity and employees and application stacks and so on. And so, one of the first things they really wanted to do wasn't so much about saving money. It was looking at this consolidation of apps. You know, you bring together two organizations or three organizations, they're all going to have different views of what they should be using for file sharing or planning or task management or even collaboration, basic collaboration. So that's what we found here. And they say they've consolidated down from 2,400 paid applications down to 400. So quite a substantial shift in a short period of time as well. You know, probably they've done this over a couple of years. I think that's a huge amount of organizational change. If you're wedded to a particular tool, you know, and suddenly it's like, well, you're not using that anymore. That's quite a bit of disruption. It'd be interesting to know what employees think of that. On the flip side of what employees think of that as well, it's the automation of the provisioning time. And this is really something that you see now with most SaaS management tools. They're pretty heavy on automation. And you can see why. You know, 10,000 hours, that sounds like a lot of hours, right? But actually, it really isn't. If you think about trying to provision, you have a new hire and you're trying to provision maybe 10 SaaS applications, maybe 20. That's kind of the average that most users use. Think about all the passwords you've got to set up and the accounts that have got to be created and and the onboarding and the tracking of that stuff. Well, that's really, that's quite a big admin overhead from anyone who's spent time provisioning a user in the old world of kind of Windows networks and maybe just Office and Exchange. You know, you kind of gave them their Windows logon, and their PC was pre-built with Office, and they logged into Outlook and they got their email. It was pretty simple, right? That isn't the case with SaaS when you have 400 different applications out there doing various things. So this automation save is an interesting one. Having said all that, you know, Adobe have worked with Xylo for a long time. They presented at events with them and so on in the past. I'm pretty sure that Adobe are also investors in Xylo, sort of seed investors from way back, from what I remember. So there is a connection there. What I find funny about it as well, of course, is if you've tried to manage Adobe Creative Cloud or Document Cloud or any other Adobe applications, they're actually really difficult to get to grips with in terms of SaaS management. Whilst the optimization rules are quite simple, as in if you're using more than one instance of a Creative Cloud application, then it's probably cheaper to buy the whole suite. You can get stuff like usage data easily from Adobe portals. They just don't provide that information via their own APIs. So, you know, if Adobe wanted to manage their own software using Xylo, they'd find that quite tricky. That would also be the same with any other SaaS applications. Nothing to do with Xylo's capabilities. It's to do with what Adobe make available to their end users to be able to manage their software. Of course, it's in Adobe's interests to maybe not enable that to be easy, because you end up spending more money on software that perhaps you're not using. Historically, Adobe software has been like that as well. You know, you used to buy a suite and maybe you weren't using everything, and people say, oh, I need Adobe for something, and maybe it's for a short-term project and you're not doing that optimization at the end of the year to kind of you know, optimize your Creative Cloud subscriptions, and that stuff's expensive as well. It's amongst the most expensive desktop software that is generally deployed, so you really do need to pay attention to it. So I wonder whether Xylo will have any influence over Adobe in terms of getting them to kind of open up the management of their software to be a bit more manageable, and to be able to deliver these savings for other companies as well.
There you go. Rich, any thoughts?
Only one thing really, Salesforce bought Tableau, not Adobe.
Yes,
just for accuracy. But Adobe, they did start to acquire a company called Figma last year for 20 billion. So they probably need to try and save a bit of money to put towards that.
Not a small chunk of change, that is it? No.
But I did see this morning, interestingly enough, given what we were talking about earlier, that the EU have said that they're joining in probing that acquisition. So that the US and the UK are already having a little look at it, and the EU have said that they're going to open a probe as well. So another example of you know, tech companies being watched maybe a little bit more closely than ever before. But in general, yeah, the concept of, you know, in some ways, you know, I was a reseller when Adobe Creative Cloud was introduced, and that was very much the kind of watershed moment for SaaS software becoming common. You know, pretty much everyone uses Adobe. So there feels like a certain amount of irony of, as AJ said, you know, of Adobe being a case study for a SaaS management tool. But, you know, it goes to show that everyone needs it, you know. So for people listening, if, you know, if there are leaders or people within your business who kind of say, oh, you know, we know what we're doing, I think it's quite a nice example to, you know, to point to Adobe and say, look, this is what they're doing. You know, they make SaaS software and they need help managing SaaS software. So, you know, here we are as a you know, an automotive company or a pharmaceutical company, of course we need help. So I think it can be quite useful for you know, a lot of our audience.
You know, and they were surprised at what they found as well. So you think, well, they know what they're doing. Surely they're a tech company, but they were surprised by the scale of the savings and certainly the consolidation of applications. You know, they weren't expecting to find the results that they got. It's a big management headache. And if a tech company can't get it right, well, it's going to be hard for, you know, banking or pharmaceuticals or manufacturing or wherever.
Yeah, and I guess anyone who's got, you know, I imagine Adobe is pretty much full of designers. So, you know, any other organization who's got big design parts of their business, you know, will find a similar proportion of wasted spend, I would imagine. Because, you know, designers and engineers, you know, if there's anything that they like, it's an extra third-party app from what I've learned over the years.
Very much so. And, you know, in Adobe have got such a strong market position. It's very difficult to use almost anything other than Adobe, because it's what everyone's trained on generally. So it's not surprising that they're looking at the Figma acquisition, because once again, that just increases their dominance in sort of the creative space, I suppose. So we've been here before with Adobe with acquisition, so that's nothing out of the ordinary. It's very difficult for anyone to move off of Adobe, so it's quite right they should get some scrutiny there.
Indeed. All right, well, I think we'll wrap it up for today. I'll just briefly recap some of the events that I mentioned at the start, just because we've got a few. So ITAM and FinOps, How to Win Big in Vegas, 12th of September. Then yes. Wisdom Unplugged.
So I just want to chip in and add a little bit to each of these. With Vegas, we've got AnglePoint, Flexera, Snow Software, and USU all joining us. So we've got some really good insight. FinOps Foundation will be doing a joint keynote as well. So really great kind of thought leadership and insights. I'll be talking about bring your own licensing and the challenges of that. And then we've got the afternoon is kind of interactive group sessions, so we can work through some practical challenges and opportunities. Then we've got a panel session. So I'm really looking forward to it. Anyone who's listening who is in, you know, North America or, you know, anywhere in the world, really, if you fancy a trip to Vegas for a day, it would be great to see you there. As George said, it's a free to attend event. Any questions, get in touch with me, but hopefully I'll see you all there.
That's it. And then shortly after, you've got Wisdom Unplugged, so on the 27th September, the London Transport. Again, another one-day event.
Yeah, and another, you know, that's FinOps focused again. So Wisdom Unplugged is with Flexera. And I think, you know, the fact that we've got two events on different continents about ITAM and FinOps shows the importance of it as a topic. And you know, we as ITAM Review, you know, we've been talking about it for over 4 years, and we're really keen to help IT asset managers and their stakeholders see the opportunities for bringing the two things together. So you know, whether you're North America or Europe, we've got something for you in September for sure.
And then AJ, I think you've got, is there anything you wanted to mention coming up?
Yeah, 7th of September, got a webinar looking at the whole of ESG, so environmental, social, and governance aspects and how that aligns with ITAM. So we've done a fair bit talking about the environmental side of things already, but wanted to really kind of broaden that out a little bit. We're doing that with an ITAD firm called Dynamic Lifecycle Innovations. We've worked with them before. And they're going to bring along their own ESG report, which is their own internal report, and then kind of go through that. And really, the interesting thing there is, you know, it does apply across all of what we do in ITAM. There are multiple options there. So yeah, that's coming up on the 7th of September. And will be available on demand afterwards as well.
Fantastic. And just to remind everyone, you know, if you want to sign up to those events, visit ITAM Review, the itassetmanagement.net, click the events tab for and then they've got conferences and webinars. So conferences on one page, webinars on the other one.
Yeah. Okay. We shouldn't forget Wisdom APAC, George.
Wisdom APAC, we mustn't forget. It seems so far away when you've got such a busy September. But that is in November. So just to remind everyone, Wednesday the 15th and Thursday the 16th of November.
And anyone who wants to speak, you know, we're always looking for end user speakers, and you know, we've got some new things this year. We've got, and for people who've never spoken before, we've got some new options to help people get involved. So rather than a full workshop, it's almost like speed dating. You know, you get a table with your chosen topic and you talk to a handful of people for the session. So if you're wanting to speak but you're a little bit nervous or unsure, we've got you covered. If you've got a great story, you know, we want to hear from you. So yes, we've got the call for speakers is out there, I believe. Get me on LinkedIn, drop me an email, and we'll be happy to help you get your presentation sorted. So yeah, looking forward to lots of new speakers and lots of new topics in Melbourne.
Fantastic. All right, well, on that note, I think we'll finish it here. Thanks, Rich. Thanks, AJ. Thanks, everyone. See you next time.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.